Welcome to the Midnight Writers Podcast, helping authors become better writers.
Episode 24, interview with Lou J. Berger. This is John.
This is Lena.
And we have with us Lou.
Lou J. Berger. It's convenient. If I'm going to be interviewed, I should be here. And I'm glad
Thank you for
here.
Attending your own interview.
Thank you for, I'm glad to be here. Thank you. Wonderful.
It's been an interesting time.
I apologize for that, and I hope you can edit some of those things out. I don't know what I was thinking.
Well, we know.
I know.
You made that quite clear. So, you said earlier you've written a few short stories, and you're working on a novel.
Yes.
You want to tell us what the novel's about?
No. It's non-genre. It's not science fiction, so it's literary. And there's two schools of thought. You can't call your own novel literary. Or literature. I'm not quite sure which. But my attempt is to write a mainstream novel set in 1978 North Carolina, where a young boy who has recently lost his mother struggles to incorporate his newly found requirement for being independent. His mom was very protective in a school environment that he's unfamiliar with as well. Of course, there's a school bully. There's a kindly teacher who takes our hero under his wing, and an almost absent father. And so we'll see how this goes. I don't want to talk about more. I may change it, but that's the basic skeleton of it. At the end of the book, if I do it the way I think I'm going to do it, instead of having found a way to thwart the bully, our hero has managed to find a way to befriend the bully, which is not typical. Usually we fight our bullies. In this case, our hero discovers why the bully is so unhappy and is able to make positive changes in both their lives.
That's interesting.
I hope so.
I actually had an experience kind of like that when I was growing up.
Were you the bully?
I was the bullied.
Oh, you were the bullied.
Yeah.
And you discovered why your bully was that way?
No. So I was bullied all throughout the school year. And then the next year I went to a new school. And guess who else showed up at that school?
The bully.
And I was the only guy that he knew. So we became friends.
Really? Once outside of the audience that he, was it a he?
Mm-hmm.
That had cultivated at the first school, then the insecurities really kicked in, and it was nice to have a familiar face. How did you feel about it? Did you find the opportunity to taunt the ex-bully and kind of give as you had gotten?
Oh, of course not. I'm a nice guy.
You are a nice guy. You're a very nice guy.
He is a very nice guy.
Yes.
But no, well, it's when you're moving school. Well, my dad was Navy, so
yep.
Moving schools was... part of life.
Was the bully's father also in the military?
No, we had just moved to a new section of the
same town.
Yeah.
Okay.
For that instance, so.
Okay.
But yeah, moving schools always sucked and was part of life, so it was nice to have somebody I kind of knew,
even if it wasn't on the best terms. Under negative and negative, it's like, oh no, that guy's coming towards me. Oh, he wants to go play a game of basketball now. Very interesting. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to
it. So hopefully your book has meaningful impact on people and its readers.
I hope it. I'm writing it for two groups of people. I know they say you're supposed to keep your demographic in mind when you write a novel. And this is my first, so I'm very nervous, and I've picked it apart, and I agonize over every chapter. And I actually have two different demographic groups. One is that super smart fifth grader and sixth grader who always has his or her nose buried in a book, reading books 3 or 4 years ahead. That's one demographic. The one that feels like an outsider, the oddball, the weirdo. And I'm writing to that person. And buried in the book is kind of a roadmap on how to be an agent of change in an environment where you are the oddball or the weirdo. And the other demographic group would be people our age who grew up in the 70s or 80s, who remember a different time when iPhones were not prevalent, when the internet wasn't a thing, and where we spent most of our time outdoors, riding bikes with our friends, setting woods on fire, or whatever, you know, normal people did when they were kids. I set woods on fire.
Setting things on fire as a kid is always fun.
Yes, I agree. No consequence.
Especially if you live in a state that allows fireworks. But anyway.
What's that like?
Not Colorado. Not Colorado, right.
Okay. Who are the authors you look up to that have helped you?
Ray Bradbury, number one. John D. MacDonald, number two.
Ray Bradbury.
Science fictional. What he wrote was more science fictional.
Did he find Fahrenheit 451?
He did. He wrote Fahrenheit 451. He wrote The Illustrated Man. He wrote The Martian Chronicles. He wrote Something Wicked This Way Comes. They made a movie out of it that was pretty good. He had a lyrical turn of phrase, and he had a descriptive, almost purplish methodology to his prose that I really envy and admire. It touches me because it's so poetic. His sentences, his descriptive elements, the characters are not as strong as his world building, but his world building is exquisite. And I enjoy reading his works very much. John D. MacDonald wrote, he was a fast, pulpy typewriter. He wrote an entire series, Travis McGee series. And all the titles had colors in them. The Deep Blue Goodbye, Nightmare in Pink, Bright Orange for the Shroud. And these were series of a beach bum who won a houseboat in a poker game and lives on that boat in retirement until the retirement funds start to dwindle. And then he goes out and he takes a job. And usually there's somebody out there who is weak and small, who's had something valuable taken from them by someone who is not weak nor small. And he will go get that thing back, legally or illegally, and his fee is half of the value of whatever the object is. When people object to, wait, half? Why would I? He says, half of something is better than all of nothing. And so the adventures that that brings about in these John D. MacDonald books, they're a lot of fun. And he intersperses the action with paragraphs of observation, philosophical musings, if you will, of this beach bum and how he's seen South Florida, where it's set and where I grew up, change in the process of just a couple decades. It was set in the 50s and 60s, so South Florida went from a sleepy town to a thriving community of business and mixed cultural melange. So those are my two, John D. MacDonald and Ray Bradbury. If I could write like them or somewhere in between, I would be very pleased.
So you got started writing short stories?
I did. Started not with novels. A critique group. No, no. Most people start with short stories because the investment to utter crap is short. You can spend a couple days and crank out 3,000 to 4,000 words, have a short story with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and character development as it will be, and then one story arc, boom. The short story, I've heard, should be the most important thing that happens in that character's life. So whatever the backstory is that's imagined, whatever happens afterwards, you're focusing in on that one thing that's the most important thing that they ever do, which is great because it gives you a very limited parameter. But a novel, it's multiple characters having not so necessarily great times and multiple story arcs throughout that you have to juggle. And for me, that's intimidating. Short stories aren't.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. And I've written a few short stories, so it's definitely a good place to start.
It's easier
to edit.
Much. You go through 15 pages instead of 250.
And you still learn a lot in a short amount of time.
It helps you learn almost all that you need to know to write a novel.
Right.
And then when you write a novel, you just need to have more characters, more plots and stuff that you need to work on. But those skills to write the individual ones can be highly developed in the short stories.
Nancy Kress, who is a mentor and a friend, told me in 2010, she said she never really started to sell her stories until she began to write in scenes. That it wasn't just enough to tell the story. You have to set up a scene and the consequences thereof. And novels are simply many scenes. Short stories are usually one, maybe two scenes. But once you write in scenes, you start to sell. I've noticed that myself. Which is, it's a mind shift. It's a little bit different than just sitting down and banging out a story. If you craft it as a scene, it's different.
And a scene being like a location?
Well, it's a mixture of location and character and time and place. And there's description, just enough in a short story to get you through. Remember, you want your reader to do most of the work when it comes to the description. You don't want to be meticulous. There's just other things that are more important. The setup of the world, what is true and what is not true, the conflict, how to resolve the conflict, what are the things in the way of solving the conflict, and what does the hero do that's above and beyond the call of duty to get the conflict solved. So all those things have to be integrated well into a scene. I have a short story that will be coming out shortly. It has six scenes. It's a long short story, but it's six scenes. And each one is necessary for developing the plot, increasing tension, and to uncover more about the character or the problem at hand.
Yeah, I usually have several scenes in mind, so.
They're fun. Flash fiction is like one scene. It's
yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's minimal tough. Description. Very little characterization. The characterization has to flow from what they say or what they do, rather than saying, I had sandy blonde hair that day. And blue eyes, as opposed to normally. And I have brown eyes.
That's interesting flash fiction right there. And we're done. It's like, wait, what happened to the eyes?
So when did you decide that you were going to pursue writing at a professional level?
It's kind of a midlife crisis thing. So I was 39. It was 10 years ago. I was about to turn 40. And I was an avid reader. I still read a lot, but not like I used to. And my then wife said, you should think about writing. And I was unsatisfied, as you are when you're experiencing midlife crisis, with where I was and where I thought I might be by that time. Because 40 is a big number. That's a big number. Not as big as 50. That's a different story. But I decided I would take a stab at writing. And I went on Google. And I typed in Denver and writing and critique. And the first thing that popped up was a writing critique group here in town called, helmed by Melanie Tem. And Melanie Tem she's world famous. Writers, horror writer, HWA member. She's won awards. She's just amazing. And I joined her group, and I've never looked back. I sold my very first story was a homework prompt that she gave the group. Homework was something she would say, you know, just here's an idea. Go home, write 1,000 words on this topic, whatever you want. Come back and we'll read it next week. And we did. And one of them resonated with the group well enough that I put it out there in the world, and it was snapped up. And it was my first professional sale. So I was very, very pleased that a homework assignment,
yeah,
I may have spent half an hour on it, actually earned me cash. It was really amazing. I got 10 cents a word for my very first pro sale, which is double at the time what with pro rates. That was 10 years ago. So I don't think I've sold that many total. In 10 years, I've sold, I think, 8 stories, 9, maybe 10. And it's fun. I like it. But I want to do something with more meaning. So the novel is very important to me. Even while it scares me, I still want to do it.
Mm-hmm. I know that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm actually kind of scared to ask this question.
Penis.
Of you.
Was that the wrong thing to say?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
I'm sorry, say it again.
So is that your answer to this question?
No, I didn't realize we had gone an entire podcast without saying that word once, and I didn't want to disappoint the loyal fans who are now tuning in to listen to all these podcasts to see if they can guess, it's a drinking game, at what moment and second will Lou Berger say that word?
Okay, the question I was going to, or whatever. What is the strangest thing that you've had to Google for research for a story?
Oh, I don't know. If I were to list out the things that I have Googled just because I was curious, you think my saying that word is bad. It would, like how long does a body take to putrefy from a recognizable corpse into a pile of goo? That's hard to find. That is hard to find. But you need to know that if you're going to write a story where that's an important point in the events that take place.
And testing it's out. You can't test those.
Well, you can, but you don't admit it
once
on the air.
Yeah. And then you're,
yeah. Yeah.
You may not finish writing your story.
Then you're going to have a lot of time to write.
Yeah. That's true.
Wearing an orange jumpsuit saying, Warden, I need access to a notebook. I've got an idea. Sit down, Berger. Yeah. Stop talking. All right. I literally, any number of things. Any number of things that in polite company people would recoil in horror. Sometimes they're important. For example, there's a short story I'm contemplating writing I attended Mike Brotherton's launch pad last year up in the University of Wyoming. And if you're a budding writer and you are interested in hard science, especially of the astronomical the variety, you should apply to launch pad. Little plug for launch pad. And so one of the things that he taught us that I had no idea, there is a phase in the decline of a star in which the core of the star, almost within moments, the entire core fuses to carbon. The whole thing fuses to carbon or iron. I have to go back and look at my notes. One or the other. Mike, if he hears this, he'll correct me. And that happens almost instantaneously. The entire core of a star, if you think about how big a star is, that's an enormous amount of material. And you've created out of inferior elements iron or carbon, whatever it is. And I was thinking that that could be, how long does that take? And that's hard to find if you Google it, like core and iron. If you Google iron core, you'd get pictures like you would not believe. Inappropriate, I won't even tell you. But that's the kind of thing that I would be searching for. You have to add star, then you have inappropriate pictures of movie stars. So you try to think, you know, iron or carbon or whatever it is, and shifting all at once, and it's hard to find. So you have to be creative and learn how to Google so you get exactly the results you're looking for.
Good point. I've had several encounters of Googling something. I'm whoa, I did not want to see that.
Yes, exactly right. You have to put your safe search on. But then you weed out some of the really juicy stuff. You're not going to?
Nope.
No? Okay.
It was implied.
Yeah.
Okay. And you've mentioned earlier you use Microsoft Word.
I do.
To write.
Not for novels. For novels, I use Scrivener.
Okay.
Because there's just too much. There's too much to juggle. And if you think about a novel as one giant thing to work on, it's overwhelming. It's daunting. I couldn't do that on Word. So Scrivener allows me to have 30 different short stories if I'm doing a 60,000 word novel. So 30 different chapters of about 3,000 words each or 2,000 words each. And I can crank out individual. I can jump right to the section or the chapter that I want to work on. And there it is in its entirety on the screen. And now I'm not going to be intimidated by that.
Yeah, and the distraction-free mode is helpful, too, in Scrivener.
I don't know about that.
No?
I don't know what that means.
Oh, I can show you. Okay. Because certain keys you hit, and it brings up, it's like composition mode or something. It blanks out everything.
Oh, I have seen that. I didn't know. I was just like full screen mode.
Yeah, you could actually put it like a background picture, and then you have nothing but your story to look at.
Okay.
And it's actually quite helpful.
That sounds wonderful. It doesn't automatically in the background turn off Facebook, for example. Because that would be a distraction-free mode, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
That would be good. You just unplug
it
from Wi-Fi.
It does activate Do Not Disturb on a Mac, but you don't have a Mac, so.
No, I am an inferior human being, clearly.
But on my Mac, it actually turns on just Do Not Disturb, so all the pop-up notifications are hidden.
I like it.
So it is helpful for staying on topic, not getting distracted.
I get distracted easily.
Scrivener's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay, so where can listeners find you online?
With Twitter, they can go to Writer LJ Berger. I should have put author, but I didn't. So Writer LJ Berger. Or they can go visit the website at loujberger.com. Or they can find me on Facebook. I have an author page on Facebook as well. I think it's Lou J. Berger-author. I think that's what it says. I try to keep things on that page limited to authorial, not just random comments about observations of the world. That's for my personal, and I think, frankly, that makes most people disgusted. So I should probably cut that out. I want to build my readership audience. I need to be more professional.
Depends on who your readers are.
That's true. Yeah. So that's basically it.
You have any events coming up? That you're going to conventions?
Go to Worldcon in Kansas City. Okay. I'm definitely going to Mile High Con here in town. Rose Beedham puts together an amazing convention.
Well, actually, at Mile High Con, we're going to have plan to have our release party for our anthology, Domesticated Velociraptors.
I can't wait to read those. I can't wait to read those.
It's going to be fun.
And Malcon, Nikki Ebride's Malcon, Myths and Legends.
I know.
I love it.
He kept calling it Malcon, and I'd never heard anybody say that. And I'm like, what is that? Sounds like a Firefly convention.
Yeah, it's Mal Reynolds. He comes around, Captain Tight Pants. He walks around, and he says...
It's just an entire convention of people dressed as Mal.
He has a target on his chest, and he points to it, and he grins, and he goes, I aim to misbehave. And nobody gets it. So he has to be escorted from the property. Security guards have been warned. Anybody with really tight pants, get him out. So the rest of the stuff happens. Sometimes I do a reading in Malcon. I read a short story. Something I've written.
When's that one?
October. August.
August.
It's in August. October.
And Jim Butcher's going to be there.
Yes.
This year.
Yes. I had proposed that he actually dissected a live cow on stage and be a butcher. And he indicated no.
Oh, he was not too keen on that idea?
No, and I think he unfriended me after that.
Weirdo.
I know, right? Yeah. How could you, with a name like that, why aren't you cutting apart animals? Yeah. I don't understand. No, he's a good guy. He's a really good guy, and I enjoy our conversations very much. We don't always agree, but he's
That's
very...
still good conversations.
He's very good conversations.
Do you know what weekend it is in August?
I
can look it up,
but... I think it's 14th through the 16th, but I'm not positive.
Ew. So, it's last weekend, according to when this podcast is going to come out.
Oh.
So anyway, hopefully you went to Malcon and or Myths and Legend Con, for those who don't like acronyms.
Yep.
I just like acronyms. I just like ones that I understand.
Myths and Legends Con.
In Denver, and we're able to help convince Jim Butcher to...
Dissect a cow.
Dissect a cow.
Oh! This is my big blade. No?
No.
So okay. When's your cow story coming out?
In the next year. It's an anthology called... I can't say that word. No... S word. There I was. And it's an anthology in which every one of the stories has to begin with that line, either spoken as in dialogue or just in the text itself. So every story begins that way.
And it involves cows.
Alien cows. They're not really cows. They just look like cows. Think of it as convergent evolution. They have little baby hands that pop out of crevices in their front legs. So they've got hooves like a cow would, but they've got little manipulative baby hands, which is very creepy.
It is very creepy.
Yeah, and they're trying to destroy all of humanity, so we want to die. We want them to die.
And their stupid little baby hands.
They're stupid little baby. You know, I got the idea watching a Chick-fil-A commercial. Where they were parachuting into a stadium. And I was thinking, you know, people are looking up and like, oh, look, parachuting cows. And the announcer in the commercial is like, wait, there seems to be a problem. There are cows parachuting on the 50-yard line. And I thought... Watching the commercial for the first time, because I have a writer brain and not a normal brain, I thought, I don't think they'd be laughing if the cows were dressed in camouflage and holding machine guns. And I thought, hey, there's a story there. So, yeah, that's that story.
We look forward to, I think, that story coming out.
I hope so. I hope it's, I've really enjoyed it. I think it's the best thing I've done so far.
I think I'll have to read it just to see what it's about.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. Well, in my brain, the alien cows they're a race called the Nuits. There is an Egyptian cow god called Nuit. So I've named these Nuits. And we meet them off camera well before in the backstory. We humans meet them in a first contact scenario. And they've got faster than light. No, we've got faster than light. They have time travel technology. So we meet them near their planet. Something goes wrong and we kill their diplomatic corps, all of them, and blow up their ship. But we keep enough of it so we can steal their time travel technology, which is good because they come after us and kidnap our ship and get there are faster than light. So now they've moved from their little isolated solar system to our Earth, and they've gone back in time, and they keep changing the outcome of our wars to maximize human death.
Oh, interesting.
They're trying to eradicate us. Mm-hmm. So... So our time corps of soldiers, which is the main characters in the short story, have to fight Nuits, who look like cows, in the middle of established human wars. Because they're all there messing around and trying to make them. I know, it's called the Interleaved Wars. It's terrible. So it's like the Germans are fighting the Allies, and they're having that war. And meanwhile, little fancy time-traveling super soldiers from the future and Earth are fighting cows in the battlefields.
Like a war within a war.
It's a war. It's an interleaved wars. That's right. That's right. We're out of time. You're giving me that look.
No. See, it's interesting to get into the mind of an author's
Chick-fil-A has given me a short story idea.
Yeah, people always wonder where we get ideas, and this is why we say
everywhere.
Yeah, I'm watching SEC football. I'm thinking, that's a story right there. I can make a story out of that. Parachuting cows. And because they were amazed, and I thought, yeah, they wouldn't be happy if they were holding machine guns. Ooh.
And on that note, we thank you for joining us this month, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Thank you very much.
Thanks much.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Riders Podcast. If you've enjoyed this content, sign up for our newsletter on our website, midnightriderssociety.com, where you'll get a lot more great information. See you next Wednesday.